Well may we say God save the Queen, because nothing will save the Governor General.
You know I've searched my heart to prove there's better ways to push and pull. Hey, whatever gets you through these days.
Hello, and welcome to Well May We Say, a progressive podcast about Australian politics. This is episode 62 for Thursday, 30th of August, 2018. I'm Jeremy Sear, and each week I'll be joined by a different guest host to help me discuss what's just happened to our country, what's likely to happen next, and hopefully what we can do about it. Tonight's guest host is returning guest host, Cam Smith. Welcome back, Cam.
Hi, Jeremy. Thank you. I feel welcome.
Now, I know that this is going to be a difficult week to find anything to talk about, but I thought...
Yeah, not much happened.
But there's a bit of good news. I don't know if you heard about this. So, in fact, you know what? This is a great week. Like, how good can it be when we lost two terrible politicians this week? We lost Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull, a man who has basically been giving cover to the right for, well, the entire time he's been in office. And in fact, even before he was in office, when he was just leader of the opposition, his entire role has been to put a supposedly pretty face on all of the horrible, nasty right-wing shit that the Liberal Party want to actually do.
Yeah.
And that finally came back to catch him. And he's lost. He's gone. We've lost another terrible Prime Minister.
A good riddance.
It's good, isn't it? I mean, were you worried there was a possibility that he might continue on covering for the right, trying to convince, you know, Muppets who don't pay attention to what's going on, that just because he's not the horrible monster who's been, you know, personally persecuting the refugees on Nauru, and you know, he was in office when the rest of us finally pushed for marriage equality, no matter what hurdles he put in our path on the behalf of the right, like, he was in office during that time, so, you know, maybe he deserves some credit for that. He certainly thinks he does.
I thought there was a chance he might hang on, but then I realised that would be against his entire character to display any sort of spine.
He did kind of, like, just at the last second, like in the last 2 days from, say, the Tuesday or the Wednesday, decide to fight. And up until that point, he'd been rolling over to the right, because what we've learned about bullies, and wasn't his speech on Monday, and, you know, I've never given in to bullies. Look, your entire strategy in government has been, whenever they come for you, you know, play dead on the floor and hope that they'll go away. Why else did you give Dutton that super ministry?
Hmm.
For some reason, you thought that if you give bullies what they want, they'll be satisfied with it and leave you alone. Because that's definitely how it works when you pander to bullies.
Hmm. No, it's not how it worked.
Weirdly, it turned out not to be, no. So what I still reckon, as we said in the last episode, that he should have called an election on Monday.
Well, he could have done a lot of things last week. He could have called an election. He could have referred Peter Dutton to the High Court. He could have made a lot of moves that would have had a big impact, but I think maybe even though he is essentially spineless, at his core, he must just hate the Labor Party more than he hates the people that were ruining his life.
I don't know. I mean, he is resigning his seat now, which doesn't help the government. He's doing it straight. He's not waiting to an election. Julie Bishop is going, but she's... And again, these are all fantastic things. Julie Bishop is a terrible person who's done awful things.
Mm.
She only seems less evil because she's been compared with people like Peter Dutton and Scott Morrison. And notably, in the ballot, Peter Dutton's supporters, they wanted Julie Bishop to get up ahead of Scott Morrison. So all Scott Morrison's supporters were like, no, no, we need to prevail against Peter Dutton, so nobody vote for Bishop. And so Bishop ended up with... Did she get just her own vote?
I think 8 votes.
Oh, okay.
I think she got 8 votes. That's eight votes after having visited every electorate in the country like twice or something, campaigning for every single person in the room.
I'd forgotten that we also got rid of her this week, so that's also good. But yeah, Malcolm Turnbull has presided over a government that has massively increased the gap between the rich and the poor. He's permanently damaged the budget with another lot of devastating personal tax cuts that have ripped a huge further hole in the budget after Peter Costello's effort in 2004, 2005. He's presided over the torture of people, the destruction of children on Nauru. He gave Peter Dutton more power to do more destruction stuff with that. What else has he done? He put LGBTI people through a vote on their basic humanity and whether they should have equality before the law. So we've got to have a debate on whether they were human beings or not. What are the other atrocious things that he's done in his time as Premier?
He's overseen the introduction of an all-seeing surveillance system.
Oh, yeah, he's done that.
From which none of us could escape.
He oversaw the unleashing of Robodebt to try and squeeze money back into the budget from people who don't owe it, who are the very poorest in our community, harass them to suicide and so forth.
Yeah, although maybe you look at how badly that was implemented. Perhaps the all-seeing surveillance state is not so bad. It's like half the computers are waiting on an update or something.
Or alternatively, maybe it's... Hey, you're the one with the conspiracy podcast. Maybe the surveillance state is perfectly going perfectly well and they know that each of these Robodebt letters are false, but they don't care because, you know, when you send one of these bullying things out to people, you can get people to pay it because they don't think they have the energy or ability to fight against the state and give up and just pay it.
Yeah.
Like, they have got money back from the very poor that the very poor did not owe them.
Yeah. The entire debt collection industry is based on those concepts.
Yeah. Horrific. What else has he done? He's overseen the further grinding of the very poor, like not in addition to Robodebt, just keeping, you know, Newstar down at, what, $40 a day. He also helped unleash the nasty attack on Sudanese people in Victoria. They were running around telling us that everybody in Victoria is afraid to go to a restaurant. And, yeah, Turnbull did that.
Yep.
He's been a monster.
He wasn't a good bloke, but luckily we're rid of him.
Isn't it glorious? And from his tantrum when he just got through last election and just scraped over the line and he still had a tantrum about it. Well, I mean, he was almost certainly going to lose at the next election anyway based on the polling. But, you know, there was a risk. There was a risk of him somehow coming through. And now we're rid of him. And thank bloody God. Good riddance. What a glorious week that we got rid of Turnbull. Mm. And we also got rid of Dutton. Oh, well, we didn't get rid of him. He's back in his same ministry.
Yes. Well, he's back in his super ministry.
Fine. But his pitch at the top job failed, and that's got to count for something.
Yeah.
And his party hates his guts now, particularly the people who supported him, who are like, so many of them have lost their jobs in the ministry, and then they've looked up and Dutton and Cormann are still there, and they're bitter as hell.
Yeah. Because they've done away with, like, a huge chunk of their paycheck, and it all came down to them essentially not being able to count.
And that's my local member, Michael Suker, who was one. It was him and Zed Sejelja that were doing the numbers, and they fell flat on their faces. God, what a miserable monkey Michael Suker is.
Although, did it come down to them not being able to count, or did it come down to people lying to them and saying they would vote for them? Because that was one of the complaints from Dutton's camp. Although I have said that we can't call it Dutton's camp because that'll confuse us with the concentration camps he runs.
Yes.
But Dutton's people were complaining that people had lied to them. And it's like, surely from all of the extensive torture experience the Liberal Party has, both in Nauru and, you know, in the form of Andrew Hastie, etc., you should know that you don't always get the best answers when you're asking the questions under duress.
I was going to say, it's like, we were threatening those people. We were ringing them up and threatening them their jobs, their pre-selections. We threatened them, you know, honestly and above board, and for them to lie to us while we were threatening them, it just makes you wonder about the integrity of these people.
Yes.
So we've lost Julie Bishop, so the lady who's a lawyer campaigned to, lawyers have to take a brief, but they don't necessarily have to follow every dodgy stratagem their client wants them to, and the objecting to the idea that if somebody with an asbestos-related claim was very sick and likely to die, that their claims should be brought forward so that they can actually be heard before they die, and trying to make sure that doesn't happen, as allegedly Ms. Bishop actually did in practice. Look, that feels to me like fairly revealing of a person's character.
Yes, it is. And, I mean, even just the idea that they thought, all right, who's a viable third candidate here? Asbestos Bishop, like, that she would in any way resonate with the voters just points to the lack of talent across that group entirely.
Well, I mean, for Malcolm to be considered moderate, I mean, none of them are moderate. You couldn't be a moderate person and be in that party at the moment. It's not really a broad church at all. They do agree on one thing, which is giving massive tax cuts for very big companies. But other than that, they're more and more far right, even on social stuff.
Hmm.
The moderates say that they support marriage equality, but they still didn't respect the humanity of LGBTI people enough to make the decision themselves. Back to Michael Suker, he's not a moderate at all. He's an extreme right winger, and he was one of the people who was opposing marriage equality. But he was demanding that there be a vote so that we knew what each of the members' electorates actually thought. And when his electorate came back 66% in favour of marriage equality, he abstained. I mean, what a giant F you to everybody.
Mm. Did Scott Morrison not also abstain from that vote?
We're talking about the good stuff.
Oh, right.
We're talking about happy things this week. The end of Malcolm Turnbull, the thwarting of Peter Dutton, the end of Julie Bishop's career, Michael Sukkar and Zed Zeldra falling on their faces. It's a happy, glorious week, Cam.
All right.
Which we can celebrate. Wonderful, wonderful week. Australia is better for it.
Yes, nothing bad happened.
Okay, something absolutely terrible happened this week, and Australia is much, much worse for it. So, Scott Morrison is now the Prime Minister.
Oh, right.
Did you hear about this? Yeah, yeah, it's pretty shit. Even though it's hard to tell so far what he's going to do differently, since he's just put all of the same awful people back in the same awful portfolios to do awful things. And it's like, well, that feels like a lunge to the right, except then you remember, wait a minute, they already had those under Malcolm Turnbull. So
he's still as equally beholden to the forces that sort of controlled Turnbull by virtue of the fact that they couldn't afford to have anyone crossing the floor.
Well, that's right. And they've got to win Wentworth now that Turnbull's going.
But with the advantage of him not having any sort of like any of the supposed principles that Malcolm Turnbull was supposed to have.
Yeah, they're trying to portray him as if we should believe that he has principles because he's a daggy dad and he loves his footy team. You know, and he's just an ordinary knockabout bloke who's got the number one ticket holder for a football team, which I think is complimentary. We don't really know what he owns other than his very expensive house, because he gets all these gifts, but on his register of interest, it's just this trust that it says is dormant. But what exactly is within that trust? Who knows?
Mm.
Yeah, no, just an ordinary daggy dad who has been brutally mistreating refugees since the Tony Abbott years and claimed dishonestly to have stopped the boats, as if that was a good thing, but also clearly not true since the government has had to admit that they keep intercepting boats because they keep coming, including the one that arrived this week.
Yeah, and got through.
I mean, there's other stuff to talk about in Australia versus Humanity. We've got Nauru busy taking down the dodgy tents and so forth, removing all of the evidence of what it's doing to the refugees there, because, you know, nothing says, nothing to see here, everything's fine, like immediately shutting down huge parts of your operation before the world appears in your country. Yeah, that's totally above board. Like, clearly everything's fine.
Hmm.
But, yes, yeah, so a boat arrived off the Daintree, which seems to me to be about the worst place that you could arrive, given the likelihood of being eaten by a crocodile.
Yeah. Nice place to visit on, you know, on a holiday, but maybe not to try and survive in.
Yeah, I don't think when you go there on a holiday, you get out of the car and run around the rivers and stuff.
No.
I think you stay away from them. You stay in a nice big car and, you know, don't ford too many streams in it. Yeah. Anyway, do we know that they've all been picked up now?
Yeah, they've all been picked up because they were found by a fisherman.
Oh, a couple were. A couple were. They weren't all. Like, there were two of them that were picked up by that fisherman guy.
He could have been a true blue Aussie hero because he took them fishing and took a few selfies with them and things, but then he undid all of his good work by turning them in.
Well, and also I'm not sure about the good work. Like, he dragged them out to go and got them to peel in some crab things for him. So he got them to work for him, and then he had a beer and offered them water. Like, he didn't offer them a bloody beer. He says, oh, I would have given them one if they'd asked. Maybe they were too polite to ask. Like, who doesn't actually offer them a beer?
Yeah.
He had them. Like, he's saying, like, if they'd asked, I'd have given them a beer. So he had the beers, but he didn't offer.
Yeah.
I don't know. That does make him an Aussie hero, let alone the, you know, handing them over to Dutton's Gestapo.
Yeah. Un-Australian on several counts.
Exactly. I mean, I would have liked to have heard the story about the Australians that we don't know about who've hidden the refugees and sort of smuggled them somewhere where they can then claim that they didn't come on a boat, because Australian immigration law distinguishes bizarrely between methods of arrival, as if that's got anything to do with whether you are a refugee or not and whether or not you should be protected. Anyway, I suppose the actual Australian heroes we wouldn't hear about because they would be quietly running an underground railroad somewhere safe.
Indeed.
But yeah, so Dutton's claiming, oh, no, it's the first boat in 1,400 days. Nah, it might be the first boat that we know of that arrived on our shores. It's definitely not the first boat that have been intercepted by our forces.
And most likely not the first boat that arrived either.
No, well, a couple of things. First of all, I reject the way that the Liberals try to pass stop the boats as stopped them arriving, as if when we intercept a boat and drag it out to sea, that doesn't count. Because isn't their whole line that the reason why we have to stop this is because of the journey being dangerous? And it seems to me that if you're concerned about people drowning, it's not the bit where they arrive here safely that's the problem.
Yes.
It's the bit where they come. And if you're dragging them back to sea and they're still coming, you're making the problem worse. You're exposing them to more possibility of drowning because you're dragging them back to bloody sea.
Yeah, you're making the trip twice as dangerous.
Exactly. No. If your concern is people drowning, then them still coming means you haven't stopped the boats. You've only stopped the boats if the real concern is them arriving safely, which is not your rhetoric. Anyway, there's that, and there's also the fact that when we intercept them, are we intercepting them in Australian waters, or are we just intercepting them in international waters? Because if it's the former, then they are arriving in Australia, and if it's the latter, then we're fucking pirates.
I think, in fairness, didn't we change the definition of Australian waters?
Yeah, we did. We excised a big chunk of it. But if we've done that, then how do we have any authority there? This idea that you can have this weird zone where we have power but not responsibility, that doesn't make any sense. Like, what is this magic zone where we have the power to intercept boats without it being piracy,
yeah,
but it's not Australia?
It's like when you leave your bag in a shop for a second.
What?
You say, oh, can you just take care of my bag for a second? And then, yeah, sure, I'll take care of it. But, you know, no responsibility if any refugees jump into it.
I find your analogy confusing. Sorry.
It's really quite simple. We have a special zone where if there's anything valuable in there, we'll take it. And if there's anything that we don't want, it's not part of Australia.
See, I feel like any sane legal system would not recognise that. That you are either responsible for a thing, like the Australian government only has power over Australia. If it's not Australia, it doesn't have power over it. If it has power over it, it's Australia. Those things should be inseparable. A government shouldn't have power over something that's not it. That doesn't make any sense. As far as I'm concerned, if you have a power over a zone that you can intercept boats, it's fucking Australia and they arrived.
I think the problem is you're trying to apply the concept of sanity to a very insane system.
It staggers me that they've been able to get away with this. The High Court have done so many bonkers things over the last few years. I mean, obviously the most recently is defining Section 44 in such an insane way that you don't just have to resign your dual citizenship, which I object to in the first place because a lot of Australians are dual citizens, and you shouldn't have to abandon your cultural identity just to run for parliament. So notably, it's not that you just have to resign it before you are sworn in. You have to resign it before you even run. So you might run and lose, and you've still given up your dual citizenship, which is completely unreasonable.
Yeah.
Apart from the fact that I don't actually think there's a problem with actual MPs having dual citizenship. Like, most countries don't have a problem with it. There are dual citizens in the country that they represent. Why the hell should somebody who's a Greek Australian have to give up their Greek citizenship?
Yeah.
It's not like they're traitors for Greece.
They already have to abandon all of their ideals to join.
Exactly. Like, Sam Dastyari isn't a citizen of China. You don't need to be a citizen of a country for people to feel that there is a massively... Like, money is a much stronger link than the possibility of obtaining citizenship at some point in the future. If countries really, really want to buy advocacy in the Australian Parliament, then they've got better ways of doing it than, you know, holding over your dual citizenship.
Yeah. No, it is insane that we're applying weird 19th century paranoia to 2018 politics.
And then for the High Court to have also let all of this other shit through that doesn't make any sense. I can't see why the High Court hasn't simply gone, nah, it's either Australian territory, in which case you have power over it and responsibility, or it isn't, and you have neither. There's no weird third quasi, you know, quantum state where you're both, like, you know, it's sort of Schrodinger's zone, where we both have power, but it's also not us.
I mean, the same thing happened with the kids. I think this was Labor that brought this one in, maybe Bowen, that, you know, the immigration minister used to be personally responsible for the well-being of those kids, and that had to go.
But also they have power over them. So, like, they can stop anybody protecting them, but they don't have any responsibility for them. What?
Yeah.
None of this makes... I mean, obviously, Nauru is effectively a client state, and I love the thing of, you know, we're not going to let the ABC there because the ABC will embarrass the Australian government. But we're doing it with our own sovereignty to protect the interests of the Australian government.
Hmm.
Yeah. Monstrous.
Sherry Markson's take was all of the leadership troubles had distracted Scott Morrison and Malcolm Turnbull from keeping their eyes on the borders. And this boat had snuck through.
Well, because I assume that after Peter Dutton resigned his ministry, after the first challenge on Monday, after he resigned, obviously what the nation was expecting would happen would be that Scott Morrison and Malcolm Turnbull would be manning that radar zone personally, taking it in shifts. And obviously they got distracted and were worrying about their political careers instead. And nobody was manning the radar. I mean, I don't know why it didn't occur to any of them to employ, you know, Defence Force staff to monitor them themselves, but maybe we just don't have enough and it's Australian ministers who are doing it.
Yeah, absolutely cooked.
If you can't trust your cabinet ministers to stay awake on watch, one of them, they probably fell asleep. And they, I mean, you get shot for that at wartime.
Yeah.
One of them, they probably fell asleep manning the radar and it just sort of bloop, bloop, bloop came in. Like, it was the Queensland bit. I mean, surely they know they've got to win seats up there. Why weren't they paying more attention? Fuck, it's stupid. Yeah, I also like the idea that the people smugglers saw that there was weakness and launched a tiny little boat in time, because it only takes a few minutes to get from Vietnam. They were coming from Vietnam. So it only takes a few minutes to get from Vietnam to the Daintree in a little boat. You can do it in seconds. I mean, it's pretty fast. Leadership spill on Monday.
To be fair, the signs were there. They could have seen this coming a while ago. If they were astute voyeurs of the Australian political system, they'd be like, all right, if we launch now, we'll be ready in a few months for when they finally topple Turnbull. They would have seen like the 25th failed news poll. They're like, all right, we've got to move now.
Well, I mean, yes, because it's Turnbull that we're most worried about. What we need to make sure is that, you know, if we can get out there and Peter Dutton or Scott Morrison are Prime Minister, we'll have a much better chance, because those are men of compassion.
Mm.
So if we can just, you know, obviously they saw the potential of Peter Dutton becoming Prime Minister. They saw weakness. They saw a man of kindness finally in the lodge. And they thought, you know, if Dutton's there, he's our man.
Well, they probably heard about those au pairs, and they're like, he's a humanitarian.
That's right. You could just get somebody to ring you up and say, look, we've got some kids to look after. Can you just sort of, you know, fix things up for us? They were just waiting. And then it didn't pan out for them, because Dutton didn't get it and it was Morrison instead. What kind of a world is it? What kind of a country is it where there is a candidate for Prime Minister who makes Scott Morrison seem less extreme? It staggers me there, the way the media are reporting it, are like, lots of people don't really know who Scott Morrison is. What the hell have you people been doing?
Yeah, I feel like I know exactly who he is. That's what scares me.
He's had three portfolios recently. Treasurer, in which he tried to squeeze through massive corporate tax cuts and only failed because the populists in the party realised that was a bit too much. But in the meantime, he massively slashed revenue by giving a huge tax cut to people on average incomes and above, but a tax cut that was, you know, a couple of dollars if you're on an ordinary income, and, you know, $7,000 a year if you're on a higher income. So he's done that as Treasurer. And Social Security, did he unleash Robodebt, or was it Tudge? Like, the problems arose under Tudge, but I'm not sure whether it was unleashed originally under Morrison, or he certainly would have been approving the early parts of it.
In fairness, it was originally a Labor Party policy.
But the Liberals changed the bit where they then decided to unleash without the human oversight.
Yeah, that was the Liberals.
Yeah, they, like, you know, we know that we're comparing two incompatible data sets, one being tax returns, which cover the whole year, and the other being fortnightly statements, which don't. And obviously, if you try to average over the whole year by using the tax return, it's going to be incompatible with fortnightly statements where people work for one fortnight and then not for another.
In fact, the entire tax return system is sort of based around that concept.
Yes.
Where at the end of the year, you work out what the difference was between your fortnightly or weekly payments and what you actually earned over the entire year, and you either get a tax credit or a tax debt as a result. It's the core concept of the tax return.
Well, I presume they must have known it, that it was going to cause those problems, but they just didn't give a shit. It's only poor people we're harassing. Who gives a fuck?
Yeah.
And then, of course, the other than removing the human oversight from it, the other bonkers thing being that the data sets of company names and company ABN, you know, the registered company name and the selling company name don't match up either. So you'll have people who declare that they work for, you know, Joe's Fish and Chip Shop, but it's actually Joe Smith and Family Trust or something.
Yeah.
And that's totally different. And so then settling goes, ah, I see you haven't declared that you worked for this company. Yeah, I did. I didn't know what they put as their bloody corporate name.
Yeah.
So are we giving Morrison a pass for that? Maybe it wasn't him. Maybe it was under Tudge that they unleashed it.
Oh, I don't think it gets a full pass, but yeah, I think Tudge was also fairly in charge of that.
But Morrison still presided over a period of Newstart remaining abject poverty and falling ever further behind what one would need to survive.
Yeah.
And then as Immigration Minister, of course, he's the monster who, you know, you have that video of him that played to the asylum seekers and basically drove many of them to attempt suicide, basically just sort of chatting in glee about how you will never come here. You know, you should go back into danger. If you're a refugee, you still won't come here. We don't give a damn. Piss off. monstrous. And what was the story about him going around the campus and there'd been a little boy who'd had a lolly? Well, I had two lollies. He had one lolly in each hand that he'd got through. You know, they had some kind of point system in the camp. And he offered Morrison one and Morrison just turned and walked away. Just a lovely human being. But he's the Hillsong type. I mean, he's not church isn't actually Hillsong. It's there's a Shire version, but it's the whole prosperity doctrine of the Pentecostal churches.
With Morrison, there's one quote that always comes to mind when I think of him. He was being asked about someone who had either attempted or committed suicide while they were in immigration detention that overstayed their visa. And he was asked by a journalist, could that have been avoided? His response was, could they have avoided overstaying their visa?
Yeah.
The complete lack of humanity. It's just startling.
The idea that he's being pushed as, you know, we've now got a Christian minister, a foreign minister, somebody who represents those values. It's not the Christianity of ordinary people who follow, you know, the teachings of Jesus. It's the teachings of the people who have distorted that into the things like the prosperity doctrine, where if you are rich, it's because you're blessed, because you're good, and God is rewarding you, and you deserve your wealth. Conversely, if you're poor, it's your own fault. You're obviously sinning. Stuff you. We don't need to be sympathetic to you. You deserve it. It's the kind of philosophy that justifies inhumanity. It's the philosophy that says if somebody's down, kick them. They deserve it.
Yeah. I think it was another Morrison quote where they asked him about doing something about, maybe it was about New Start, but he said what he was interested in was, you know, helping out people who worked. He wanted to give tax cuts to working people.
Well, that's his pitch too, isn't it? So this is what he was saying to his new ministry. We're going to redefine what fairness means in the country, which is a brilliant start. We're going to redefine what people understand an actual word to mean. So that's nice. After Dutton's whole, we have to be on our guard against compassion. Now he's going to redefine what fairness means. Anyway, he specifically said, we're going to redefine what fairness means in the country. Fairness means a fair go for those who have a go. And by those who have a go, he means like people who can get the capital together to start a business. So to people who don't do what I call having a go, fairness doesn't mean having a fair go at all. Fairness means being unfair to those people. Fuck those guys. You haven't started a company? Well, fuck you. You're not rich. You're not earning a high income? Well, fuck you. You don't get fairness. You don't get a fair go. Fairness means you don't get a fair go unless you're already fucking doing well.
Yeah.
Brilliant. And he also claims we're going to get electricity prices down. In fact, he called the new energy minister, who he's appointed somebody who's a mad climate skeptic, you know, one of these people who's like, oh, well, maybe the drought in New South Wales in winter is perfectly normal. Maybe it's just one of those things that happens. And if it isn't, you know, maybe nothing we can do about it. Anyway, he's given that ball flag pins. Actually, we've done flag pins. And he's like, I've been wearing this now for many, many years. I cannot remember when I started doing this. The reason I wear it is because it reminds me every single day whose side I'm on.
Yeah, that's good.
The flag pin manufacturer.
Of the pin industry.
Side of the pin industry. Yeah, I'm trying to remember what he called the Minister for Energy, but it's like, I think he called him like Minister for Getting Electricity Prices Down. Of course, the reason why electricity prices are high is because since Abbott, the Liberal Party has waged this ludicrous war on renewable energy, which everybody knows is the future of energy. The word sustainable? Sustainable energy? The point about it is it's sustainable. It's in the name. It's sustainable. It's energy that you don't just sort of dig out, burn once, and then the climate's fucked. It's, you can keep running it. It's sustainable. And they've just declared war on it since they tore down the carbon pollution reduction scheme. All they've done is been trying to shield for the coal industry. Nobody wants to invest in the coal industry. The coal industry will only build new plants and spend money on it if the government gives them huge subsidies, because the investors know that without those huge subsidies, they're screwed. And that's why our electricity prices are so high, because investors can't invest in the projects that we need to bring the energy down. Also because they privatised the bloody poles and wires and they gold-plated them, which massively jacked up all of our prices.
Well, that's the other reason why electricity prices are high, is because the entire system's been privatised. It's this funny thing about capitalism, but generally private companies aren't in favour of reducing their profits.
No.
So the only real way to get electricity prices down, besides investing heavily in renewables, is to nationalise the electricity industry again.
Which they were weirdly arguing about when, like, Liberals were arguing for the government to take over Liddell when it was being shut down. It's like, We're opposed to government's owning things. We need private industry to do it, except when private industry doesn't do what we like, in which case then we should take it over. Because we're consistent conservatives.
So I guess the question that remains, though, is will Morrison be able to actually get through to the next election.
Because he needs to. Right now he's less popular than Bill Shorten. Like, even on the preferred prime minister thing, the voters, according to the polls, have been massively angry with the Libs and are not impressed by Morrison being prime minister. So, yeah, he needs time to come back. So we can get to Peter Dutton in a second. So Julie Banks is going, and she says she's a victim of terrible bullying in the Libs and supported by Kelly O'Dwyer, but Kelly O'Dwyer's not going anywhere. Julie Bishop's going, but I think she's going to wait out to the end of the year, until the end of the term. Turnbull is going, he's announced that he's going, and Labor has announced they're not going to give him a pair. So he's got like...
Although there haven't been pairs for any of the other by-elections, though. No. So, and that didn't seem to really affect anything.
That's true, but the other by-elections were Labor MPs, so it didn't change whether the government had a majority, whereas Turnbull being gone means the government doesn't have a majority.
Yeah. Well, then we might see a few people getting referred to the High Court if they can squeeze it through.
That would be awesome. Because, okay, so Julie Banks herself has a Section 44 issue because she's got Greek heritage. Josh Frydenberg does. There's various Liberals who just simply haven't been referred because the government's had the numbers to stop them.
Well, yeah, I mean, Julie Banks, are they going to bother because she's going? Frydenberg is such a tricky one because it's a bit of a dog act because... But that's the High Court's fault.
Yeah.
But his citizenship problem is that I think at the time that his ancestors were driven out of Hungary, like, Jews weren't recognised as people, and then afterwards they've, you know, obviously corrected that. So he's got, like, technical Hungarian citizenship that he could lay claim to. But at the time, his grandfather or whoever it was wasn't allowed to be a citizen.
It's just a stupid idea that the High Court's imposed that being eligible for a country's citizenship makes you a dual citizen or questions your allegiance. It's just it's so bonkers. Like, it's just an unworkable test. I don't know what the hell they were thinking.
The thing is, anyone could be eligible to be a citizen of anywhere because any country could bestow upon someone an honorary citizenship at any time. So technically everyone is eligible to be eligible for everywhere.
If North Korea wanted to take the piss, they could just nominate everybody in the Australian Parliament as a citizen of North Korea.
Yeah, and they should do that. If anyone from North Korea is listening, please.
I assume that that's a big part of our listenership. Oh my God, did you hear that? Was it Sydney University? Yeah, Oni Swar at Sydney Uni sent this mad professor and some of their students. They went to North Korea and did this tour and came back reporting about how everybody there is, you know, really happy and the place is great. And they didn't need to be shown about by the security forces they had. They were able to go where they liked and it was just all lovely. It's like, what the...
It was Tim Anderson and Jay Therapel. They're like artists at Sydney Uni.
Insane.
For conspiracy fans, Tim Anderson was also briefly convicted of the Sydney Hilton hotel bombing back in the 70s. Well, I think he was convicted in the 90s and then acquitted.
Wow. Madness. All right, so obviously the point is that Morris needs time to try and get up to somewhere where they're competitive electorally. They need to put some time between the election and this shambles. But I suppose if they don't really have much in the way of buffer. And that's, of course, been one of the reasons why Turnbull's had this huge problem the whole way through, because any one of the fringe right-wingers in the party could have crossed the floor. He's never had a buffer to be able to go, well, go ahead, I don't care. But what about Dutton and the... First of all, okay, it looks like the Parliament won't vote to refer Dutton about the Section 44, and the thing that the Solicitor General said that he thought it was unlikely that Dutton would fall foul of Section 44, but also said not that any of us could basically tell anymore, because who the hell knows what the High Court is doing. None of us thought that everybody would lose in the last lot that went before the High Court, so I don't know.
Yeah.
But then there's that weird au pair thing that you referred to earlier.
Yeah. It doesn't seem fitting that he'd be able to get away with this, like, huge... Like, the Section 44 thing that he's facing is a big problem.
We think so, because, like, it's not just that there is an oblique link between the trust that he may or may not have he may or may not have a beneficial interest in or not, but between the childcare centres and the government. But he specifically voted in relation to the thing where now the childcare centres get to keep the money on behalf of the parents before it goes to the parents. Like, it's something that could potentially benefit that trust. He voted on. The stuff about personal gain is so much more relevant to whether somebody should be in Parliament than if they've got dual heritage.
Mm.
But in a way that makes the previous decisions on that, where school teachers had to resign because they were getting money from, they were being paid technically by the government. But they weren't going to still be paid by the government once they became an MP. Like, obviously, they were only a teacher up until the point. Like, it shouldn't be what you're doing on the day of the election. It should be what you're doing once you're sworn in. You shouldn't have, you know, personal gain from it. But the idea that, you know, teachers can't run for office without resigning as a teacher is insane. It's another bonkers aspect.
Well, it's that mad time concept that I think unseated some of the citizenship people because they'd, like, renounced it, but they... There was the person who got through to the Senate in, like, after somebody else had resigned, they became a senator, and they but they didn't have time to resign their citizenship.
Yeah. Well, they should have just done it automatically. Just, you know, they should have done it if they dared to run in the first place. It's fucking stupid.
Yeah.
Anyway, but the au-pair thing, because I think Labor's referred it to a committee, haven't they?
Yeah, it just seems crazy that he probably isn't going to get done for the thing that's clearly not kosher, the Section 44. And he might just get picked out on this Mickey Mouse au pair business.
Well, it's not that. I mean, the one where the guy from the AFL contacts him about the au pair and he, like, a few hours, ordinary refugees are stuck in limbo indefinitely and a connected mate can ring up and get the visa thing sorted in, you know, a couple of hours.
Yeah. I mean, I just mean that he's got this real thing that seems has the whiff of corruption about it. He's got all this blood on his hands and then what we might get him Al Capone style on the au pairs.
I don't know. I think that's got the whiff of corruption as well, though.
It has the whiff of corruption. It's just like such dumb corruption.
What about the $1 billion that his department's just lost?
Yes.
That he can't account for. I mean, how is that not a big issue? Like, it's just shonky as hell. Like, that how does a department lose $1 billion and not have to account for it?
Mm.
Like, it wasn't, you know, 20 bucks of staples. It was $1 billion. It's mad.
I mean, the thing about the au pairs, right, is someone from McLaughlin's office has called Dutton's office and spoken confusingly to someone also called McLaughlin, no relation. But the idea that you could just call up and get that string pulled.
Yeah, I mean, that's the problem.
That means that it's endemic of a larger corruption going on. If there's a situation where so you can be so casually corrupt, that means that there's more rottenness at the core of the matter.
Yes. Yes, it does.
Because otherwise you wouldn't bother calling up to be casually corrupt unless you knew that you could... it was going to work.
So that is true. I think that's the general attitude of people who are in the coterie of conservatives. They recognise a large part of it is being on the take. Like, it's not a philosophy that's about helping your fellow human beings. It's a philosophy that's about, you know, if you can grab it, get it. So it makes sense.
Yeah, it's about having a go.
That's right. having a go means trying on what you can, you know, trying it on. That's having a go. And a fair go is supporting the people who try it on. Give it a go.
Yeah.
See how far much they can get away with. And Scott, okay, so the new Scott Morrison cabinet, we've got Dutton back in Home Affairs, but with some parts of the portfolio hived off, but he still seems to have the most powerful parts, which is terrifying, so no change there. We've got Porter still as Attorney General, so no change there. He's going to continue his stupid plan to ignore the huge problems in the courts and just sort of shove them together. They'll continue doing what they're doing of underfunding the courts and not replacing judges, which means that all the problems that he describes in the family law system will continue. He's got a new treasurer, obviously, because he's prime minister, but they don't seem to have indicated that they're going to do anything particularly differently. And of course, on energy policy, Morrison's first thing is he says, I'm going to go around the drought-affected areas, but I refuse to answer any questions about climate change.
Yep.
It's got nothing to do with this. You know, how can you be saying that this massive drought in the middle of winter in New South Wales, how can you say it's got anything to do with climate changing?
That's next generation politics for you.
I mean, our baby's awake now, and so she'll be making sort of munching noises in the background. But I fear what we're leaving for them, because this whole fight, the thing that lost Turnbull, his final authority, being this wimpy back down in the NEG that was already way too weak, but this further back down to the coal lunatics. And of course, you know, this is photographs of Scott Morrison standing in Parliament with a beloved lump of coal. It's just insane, mad stuff. Like, this party, this entire party, the Liberals, are determined to burn more coal. And their line is, we're going to bring down electricity prices. And Morrison's whole announcement, you know, you are the minister for bringing electricity prices down and then appointing climate deniers to the bloody Sorry, Andrew. I'm now really offended Andrew Bolt because apparently referring to saying somebody that ignores the science on climate change as a climate denier is really referencing Holocaust deniers. Andrew Bolt gets really angry about that. Apparently that's what it is. You know, whereas referring to the final solution, that's just, you know.
It's just semantics.
Yeah.
He's just talking about we wanted just one solution to finish everything.
Yeah, so clearly we're going to go down the sheer racist race to the bottom under Morrison almost as much as we would have under Dutton. The Libs have clearly determined that race baiting is how they need to win back their support, blaming infrastructure problems on immigration, even though immigration actually helps with infrastructure because people build it and they provide taxes, and immigration is not the reason. It's not even the reason why the population is growing, no matter how much Bob Catter screams that you can add the students here during university courses and bringing money into the country with the number of Australians that are leaving and looking for jobs, and then the number of jobs that are actually there. You can add those together and look, there's a huge shortfall. No, because they're studying. They're not looking for jobs, you mad person. Also, people who are actually here increase jobs. Anyway, I'm sorry, I watched 5 minutes of The Terrible Bad Show and in which I was able to see that the three lunatic people that they had on there, like, what kind of idiot ABC program puts on Catter, Hanson and Christensen and leaves us with one ALP person and Larissa Waters to counter them? And, like, Larissa Waters wasn't even allowed to say anything. And the only time she opened her mouth, Christensen or Catter said, "You've had your say, let me speak." And, like, they just shouted it out. It was bonkers.
That's The Bad Show for you.
Oh, my God, The Bad Show. Why did I turn that on? Anyway, yeah, it's going to be about infrastructure problems, it's immigrants, law and order, it's immigrants, like at public services because we're running them down and have just destroyed the revenue base, immigrants, and
it's immigrants all the way down.
And economic problems are because we're not giving enough money to the very rich companies.
But thankfully, we've got the Labor Party that is not going to put up with race baiting. They will show that the Labor Party can race bait as well as anyone.
They'll pretend, but they'll put a nicer spin on it, Cam. Like, We do want to send all the refugees overseas and keep them offshore and make sure that they're never here. But, you know, we'll say things about how bad it is that they're being tortured as well, even though we actually vote for it every time we can.
Yeah. I feel like Labor's going to say, look, there's not an African gang crisis. There's an African-Australian gang crisis, guys.
Oh, dear. What are we going to do? How much Scott Morrison? Okay, what's your pick? How long do you reckon Morrison can hold out before the election? I mean, how long can he delay the election?
Oh, it has to be this year, right?
No, I think they can hold out to next year.
Maybe February then?
Well, it has to be held by the 18th of May next year for the Senate and 2nd of November for the House of Reps.
I can't see going anywhere near that.
Well, I wouldn't be surprised if he tries for as long as he can. Like, he's not a... I didn't realise this. Next election, there'll be 151 seats. They're adding a seat.
Yeah, they've redistributed. So there's been a redistribution that effectively means the Liberals have lost 2 seats, so that they have to win more seats. They can't just hang on to them.
Oh, wow. I hadn't realized. So that changes the whole thing too, because with 150 seats, you had the possibility of a 50-50 split, and like somebody would have to, and then somebody would have to give up an MP to be the Speaker, and then lose, then actually have a minority. Whereas the numbers are now, you could have a 50-50 split plus the Speaker now. Although hopefully that won't happen ever anymore. Because, I mean, if the Parliament ever goes back to being just Coalition and Labor, as if the Australian population is represented by those two parties alone, that would be a very sad thing.
I cannot foresee there ever being a hung Parliament again in the near future.
By hung Parliament, do you mean where one of the parties doesn't hold a majority and they have to form an alliance with another party?
Yeah.
Why not, though?
Well, I mean, If Labor can't romp this next one in, then there's something very wrong with them.
Yeah, Labor probably will romp the next one in. But the one after that, after Labor have disappointed everybody on the left, hopefully there'll be a swing back to the Greens, and maybe we'll get the situation where Labor has to form a coalition with the Greens to form government, like in 2010.
That would be ideal.
Yeah, the Conservative press scream about the hung Parliament being a disaster, but it was actually a reasonably good government. And
yeah, Labor's hung Parliament was a good government.
And it's not like the Greens voters are across with that outcome. Like, the people, if you wanted to stop that happening again, you have to get the Greens voters to stop voting for the Greens. And, like, I'm pretty sure the Greens voters are like, that was good. We'd like that to happen again.
Yeah. It's very easy to steal those votes from the Greens, though. You just have to enact good policy.
Yeah, so the Greens will be back. All right, well, let's hope for... If, however long Scott Morrison can drag this out, let's hope that he can't actually do anything in that time, because he hasn't... There's a number of things that he's just punted for the moment, and we still don't know what he's going to do. So Morrison's punted the energy problem, which, you know, is not exactly one that we can punt. It's getting worse. If you look at anything about what's happening to the Arctic, to the permafrost, to, like, this is now an increasing emergency that the planet needs to deal with. And of course, Australia's entire role recently has been as a spoiler, not just because we can't be stuffed doing our own part, which is, you know, to at least not be emitting more per capita than anyone else, because everyone else can quite... We can't exactly go and advocate for China or the US or any of the other countries to reduce their emissions when they can turn around and say, yeah, if we were burning as much per person as you guys, we'd be, like, producing twice as much. We have no moral authority to advocate for less, as long as we're being terrible. But worse than that, we've been specifically going out there advocating to make it worse. We've been acting as spoilers throughout this whole process, trying to wreck agreements. My daughter is incredibly angry about it because we're wrecking the planet. That's not even going to be the... Yeah, well, sorry, the planet is going to be here. The planet's going to be here, but just it's going to be unlivable for her.
Yeah.
Exactly. Why are they not listening to your house of protest? That's what I say. So, yeah, that's devastating. Yeah. And if anything positive is going to happen, it's certainly not going to be from this government. I feel like we're going to come to an end of this podcast in a second because my daughter is so outraged by the Morrison government's attitude on climate change that I feel like she's not going to be able to be sit quietly for any of the rest of it.
Yeah, but she's furious.
She's punted that one. They're punting. You know, wages growth is going to be a huge problem for them because they don't have any plan other than let's give tax cuts to the big companies and then maybe it'll magically improve. And on wages and jobs, they claim both have increased, but not in any way that's actually hit ordinary people. If wages have increased, it must have been at the very top end and only improving the average. Certainly people aren't noticing that there's an increase in jobs that ordinary people can get. Like, their pitch is one that people aren't going to believe because they can't see it in their ordinary lives.
No, that it's such a core part of their platform, this idea that they've increased wages. When people look in their pay packet and don't see that, how are they going to believe any of the other lies that they're telling?
Exactly. And they've punted their terrible corporate tax cuts idea. Although I don't know how that's really going to help them with the people who are opposed to it, which is most of us. Because it's pretty easy for Labor to campaign in the election that these people who desperately want to give corporate tax cuts and have only stopped because they didn't have the numbers to get them through the parliament.
Yeah.
And if they win, and hell, if they win, we already know what happened when they won in 2014. But if they get the numbers, can you imagine the cruelty of the next budget in order to pay for the tax cuts they gave out this year?
Yeah.
It's going to be bonkers. That's going to be a monster of a budget. Imagine if they scraped back in. Anyway, so, I mean, do we have any... What's the risk going forward of what Morrison as Prime Minister might actually be able to do? Or is he pretty much just a lame duck until the next election? And all we really have to be afraid of is that there'll be no actual action on climate change and we're all just screwed.
I guess the only risk is that they try and booby trap enough stuff to screw up Labor's next term.
Oh, you know, rip Nick off with the furniture on their way out.
Mm.
But they still have to get that stuff through Parliament.
Yeah. You've seen some of the unpopular things that they tried to bring in, like some of the youth allowance changes and the new started changes they tried to make that they couldn't do because they were so unpopular. I can't imagine them trying to return to those, even though they really want to. Like, they can't afford to go into the next election any more unpopular than they already are.
So hopefully just a lame duck prime ministership where you can't do anything.
Yeah.
Just sits there just with the galling idea that somebody with the monstrous record of Scott Morrison gets to call himself prime minister for the rest of the year, but hopefully can't do much more damage.
Well, I mean, it's not really about Scott Morrison. It's about what is the most marginal backbenchers going to be going to the election on.
But they compete. You know, marginal backbencher on the far right might threaten to walk if they don't, you know, get A. But, you know, slightly less far right backbencher on the extreme left of the Liberal Party, who's still fringe right winger, might argue the opposite. So, I mean, presumably they've now just got complete, you know, they're completely blocked.
But I mean, the one thing that all of those marginal backbenchers have in common is that they don't want the party to be any more unpopular than they already are. So he.
But the problem is that they're marginal in different places.
Yeah.
So the ones who are marginal in Victoria don't want the party doing anything more right wing, and the people who are marginal in Queensland desperately want the party to do more right wing things.
Yeah. So their only real move is to stay where they are.
Yeah. They can't do anything. I think they're blocked in all sides. In the same way as Turnbull was.
Mm.
Turnbull couldn't ever do anything because if he I mean, the only stuff he did was pander to the right because the right in the Liberal Party is more powerful than the moderates. But even that, like every time he did that, he weakened his position with the moderates. And he was only hoping that, you know, they would at least not turn on him for somebody like Dutton and that there wasn't anybody in the moderate side who was more likely to be taken over. And maybe he was also banking on the moderates being, you know, too gutless to roll him. And that he thought that the right were the you know, the people who were most likely to come for him. So he better pander to them the most.
Yeah. How did that work out?
Appallingly, as it was always going to. All right. I have a cranky babby who I need to attend to now that she is awake. So thank you for joining me again, Cam. We'll see you next week with a Stuck in My Craw, perhaps.
Indeed.
Excellent. And people can find you at the Gather Around Me podcast with Ben Pobgy.
The Hypothetical Institute is getting recorded more often. We did just drop a Gather Around Me a couple of days ago, though.
All right. People can find you there and at Sexenheimer on the Twitters. Thank you for listening, everybody. Thank you, Robin Gray, for the music. Thank you, Alex Lund, for the artwork. Thank you to our Patreon subscribers, who are how the podcast keeps going. It does incur costs, so thank you very much to everybody who is still supporting us. We are back on weekly recordings again. Thank you, and we will be back with a happy episode next week, looking for something good around
Indeed.
This. Indeed. No, wait, I'll do it again. Also, if you haven't given us a review on iTunes, a positive review, that would be most appreciated. That makes a huge difference. Otherwise, we will see you all next week. Thank you for joining us again.
Bye.
Bye.